An A to Z of Near-Death Adventures. Written and narrated by Brian Hogan.
A book?
That's right. When I was your age, television was called books.
Is it got any sports in it?
Are you kidding? Fencing, fighting, torture, revenge, giants, monsters, chases, escapes, true love, miracles.
Doesn't sound too bad.
The Princess Bride. When snatched from the jaws of death, tooth marks are to be expected. Hal Story. To die will be an awfully big adventure. Peter Pan. The devil was a murderer from the beginning. Jesus. A is for Abyss. Summer, 1975. They had as king over them the angel of the abyss. Revelations 9:11. Calico Ghost Town, located in the Calico Mountains of the Mojave Desert near Yermo, California, the stage on which my stepbrothers, cousins, and I played out our fantasies of a wild boomtown life in the lawless Old West. My mother and I, and later our blended family, would camp here and meet my grandparents, aunt, uncle, and cousins from Las Vegas. Calico provided a good halfway point between Glendale and Glitter Gulch. As soon as our Ford Gran Torino station wagon pulled into a campsite, my stepbrothers and I would spill out of the wayback in a flutter of comic books and snack packaging and tear off to explore the Painted Hills in a hunt for adventure. My parents complained bitterly about this behavior as they had the quaint and romantic notion of a campsite carefully pitched and laid out in a burst of loving family cooperation and togetherness. The fact that this never happened, even once, did not completely disabuse them of this notion. Looking back, I feel a wave of sentimental awe at those two deluded and brave people and their unflagging and hopeful quixotic faith that we would come around. I had three stepbrothers, Scott, Eric, and Derek. The two with the rhyming names were redheaded twins and a year younger than me. They often spoke in a private language meant to sound like the squeaking of mice. Imagine the verbal equivalent of fingernails on a chalkboard and you'll have it. Eric was fairly transparent and alternatively friendly or angry, and Derek was the good child. Careful in what he projected to adults, and sneaky. Apart from these quirks, Eric and Derek were both fun and uncomplicated, so they were my preferred companions. The Calico trip recounted here came 2.5 years after my mom, Carol, married Dave Anderson, the father of three boys. I had gone from being an only child of a single parent with four doting grandparents to being the eldest by a mere 4 months of four boys in a raucous family of six. The Brady Bunch, we were not. Scott was the same age as I, 13 on this trip, and a whole lot stronger. Built like a tank, Scott knew how to intimidate the rest of us with violence and his short fuse. My new stepfather used his hand and belt on all of us, but from the beginning, I took the brunt of Dave's disciplinary outbursts. Having an adult strike me was a new and disturbing phenomenon. My mom taught me to use my words and never my fists, but my words infuriated Dave to the point of inarticulate rage. My stepbrothers had grown up with physicality and knew how to avoid a lot of it. To say I was in an adjustment freefall is putting it mildly. Anyway, this one bright, hot, and glaring Mojave afternoon, the four of us headed up into the closest hills. The hills surrounding the played-out former silver boom town of Calico are still as colorful and purty as a gal's calico skirt. These multicolored hills fascinated us because they were littered with rusty treasures. Maybe we'll find a gun or some dynamite. And honeycombed with shafts where miners had pickaxed and blasted their way into the rock, looking for the ever-elusive mother lode. After some poking around and slipping and sliding down a tailings heap, we decided to play hide-and-seek. We did 1, 2, 3, not it, and Scott lost. He didn't explode and just started immediately counting to 100, so I got the twins to run with me over to a mine entrance hidden down in a gully between two hills. I was sure Scott hadn't seen it earlier when we'd been exploring. Just a dozen feet past the wood-beamed framed entrance, the light seemed to fail completely, and the tunnel stretched out ahead into the inky darkness, a stark change from the blinding desert sun. I led the way, walking ever more slowly as we entered the pitch dark with rough rock walls pressing in on us. Those walls and the rubble-strewn floor quickly became my only points of contact with anything outside my own mind. It was surreal how absolute the darkness was, and we quickly forgot the danger of betraying our hiding places with noise as we chattered about not being able to see our fingers fluttering directly in front of our eyes, much less each other. I continued to urge my only slightly less foolhardy twin brothers deeper into the cave-like horizontal shaft. It was perfect. In the inky and utter blackness, Scott would literally have to touch us to find us. About a minute of slowly shuffling further back into the bowels of the earth, my skin began to crawl. I started imagining nameless cave-dwelling creatures standing right in front of me, waiting for my face to bump into their matted and hairy chests. I whispered to the twins, who each had a hand on my shoulder, "Stop. I'm getting down on my hands and knees. We don't know what's ahead." I went to the cavern floor and began to inch forward, Eric and Derek alongside and only slightly behind me. A moment later, I almost lost control of bodily functions. My hand went into an abyss. The floor had disappeared in front of us. I stopped dead at the edge and tried to regain control of my breathing. The twins stopped as well. When a morsel of my courage returned, I felt about and discovered there was no longer any bottom to our cavern from wall to wall and as far forward as I dared to lean and reach. There was a vertical shaft directly in front of us, and we had come within inches of plumbing its depths. Whatever had given me the overwhelming impulse to stop and drop had, without a doubt, saved our very young and foolish skins. We backed slowly away from the precipice, got to our feet, and began feeling our way back out along the wall. Once out in the sun again, Scott quickly spotted us and beat us back to the goal, winning the round. The sensation of still sucking oxygen trumped the sting of losing the game.